Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thanks very much for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you. You're going to be glad you're hanging out with me because we have an old friend back on the show. Yeah, we haven't heard from him in a long time. We're glad we found him. Glad we've been able to recover our connection with him. Daniel Pink was someone I introduced you to back in January of 98. That's right. And he was... I don't even think his new book was out at that point, A Free Agent Nation, which was his first book. At that point, he was primarily known as the former chief speechwriter for Vice President Al Gore. And his book came out, Free Agent Nation, and it took the world by storm, and the rest is history. He's written a number of other books, including A Whole New Mind, including The Adventures of Johnny Bunko, and his new book, which is also... going to be outstanding. Another New York Times bestseller, Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. That's out right now, and it's good to have him back. Dan Pink, welcome back.
Jim, thanks for having me on the program.
After all these years, we're glad you're back.
I didn't realize it had been that long. My gosh.
It's been 10 years.
I just can't believe that. I don't think that's right.
Okay. Well, see, now you know, we're like baseball here, Dan. We keep up. We've got your ERA and your the whole thing here. Your on base percentage. We keep it up with all that. Anyway, it's good to have you back, and we're not going to let you go this time. Since you were here last, Dan, we've become like the Hotel California. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.
Yeah.
Dan, one of the things that I know that you've been working a lot on is in your book Drive about what motivates people, and a lot of it is based on a lot of the things that we do, a lot of the management styles that we use today are based on, I don't know, I want you to help us, are they based on misconceptions, things that actually aren't true and maybe never were, or how much of it are just things that have changed in the way people want to be motivated? What do you think?
It's a mix of those things. I mean, for this book, I looked at about 40 or 50 years of behavioral science on the study of human motivation. And what I found was a bit surprising. Typically, we think that what motivates people the best are rewards and punishments, this kind of classic...
The carrot and the stick.
Got it. The classic suite of carrots and sticks. And the science shows pretty clearly that those sorts of motivators are pretty effective. But... for a surprisingly narrow band of circumstances. And for many things, they don't work very well, and they often backfire.
And isn't that especially true of in the generational studies? Because in my generation, coming along when I did, back in the late 60s, early 70s as a pup, the carrot and the stick worked pretty darn good on me.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's actually a really good point. I think there is a generational difference, and part of it also is the difference in what people are doing for their actual work.
Right.
So that when the work, for work or tasks or assignments that are fairly straightforward, routine, rule-based, where you're just following a set of rules and getting a right answer, the carrot and stick motivators are actually not bad. They can be effective.
Right.
But when you ask people to do things that are a little bit more creative, a little bit more conceptual, that require a wider set of thinking, then those sorts of motivators, science is pretty clear, don't work very well.
Mm-hmm.
And you make a good point about the generational things too, because I think that beyond that, I think that the boomer generation is a little bit more comfortable with carrots and sticks, and then as you get further into the generations, whether it's Generation X or the millennials, there becomes a kind of distaste and even resistance to it.
And see, the thing that I see a lot going on out there, when you're a manager and you can't motivate someone, that's a very frustrating thing. And
sure.
I remember in my younger days, there were some people who just weren't motivated by carrots or sticks.
Mm.
And but they were in the extreme minority, But whenever they showed up, they drove the managers nuts.
What did you do with those folks?
But again, they were the outliers, though. They were the rare individual. Today, I think they're more the norm in the younger generations, and it's still driving a boomer managers crazy.
Hmm.
Don't you think? Are you seeing that?
It could be. You know, it could be. I mean, you know, part of the reason is that I think that people have an intuitive sense that for certain kinds of things, these carrot and stick motivators don't work very well. So
right.
If they're being lorded over with this endless threat of punishment or promise of reward, they're going to recoil. You know, some people will recoil against that. The other thing, and it's a big mistake that you've identified, a big mistake that managers do, is that when we see carrots and sticks not working, our response isn't to challenge the carrots and the sticks, but to do more of it.
Right. Well, one of the things we're going to talk about, folks, we got a lot more to come with Dan Pink, and we're going to continue to talk about what he's learned as he produced his book, Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us, are some of the incompatibility problems that are out there that you and I have held to be true over the years. 20 till, stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks for staying with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Hope you check it out when you get a chance, anywhere from 5 seconds to 15 minutes, whatever time you have, on whatever topic under the Small Business Sun. We got something that will help you there. You can listen, you can read, you can ask questions. You can check out my blog. You can subscribe to my free newsletter. My Brain Trust members are there, including our long-lost... I'm going to call you my prodigal son, Dan. What do you think? That's appropriate, isn't it?
I guess, yeah.
Our prodigal Brain Trust member, Dan Pink, is back, ladies and gentlemen. We found him. We thought he died, but turns out he didn't. We're so happy about that. But I'm just teasing a little bit. But his new book is called Drive. And Dan, congratulations, by the way.
Thanks.
Outstanding work, as always. All of your work is outstanding. And what was it like being interviewed by Oprah?
Well, I did her radio show, and she was one of the best. She's probably the best informed interviewer I've ever had.
Careful now. Careful.
Yeah. The current interviewer is notwithstanding.
Exactly.
She
okay,
was,
well said.
Yeah, she was incredibly well informed.
Prolific
smart.
Reader.
Oh, yeah. No,
loves
she's,
books.
She's extraordinary. You realize why she is where she is. She's,
right.
She works very, very hard, incredibly smart, and actually an incredibly nice person, too.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm not surprised at all. So we're talking about the differences between what managers think motivates people and what really does motivate them. And so there's some issue about whether they've ever had it right, Dan? And then there's some issue of how much of that, what they didn't have right, has just evolved over the last few generations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is that a fair way to
Yeah, that's a good way.
That's
a good way to put it. I mean, as I said, you know, for simple routine tasks, you know, adding up strings of columns or turning the same screw the same way over and over again, these carrot and stick motivators, you know, aren't bad. The problem is that fewer of us are doing that kind of work.
Right.
Now, the other thing about it is that in some ways we can even call that into question if you look at a company like Zappos, which takes a particularly dreary kind of work, working in a call center, which is a you know typically a pretty terrible job. I mean, you're reading from a script. Your calls are monitored. Your calls are timed. What they have done is they have essentially thrown out the book on how you run a call center, and so they give people 2 weeks of training, and then they do something really weird in incentive terms. After 2 weeks of training, they say to their employees or the people whom they've just hired, "If you want to quit right now, we'll give you $2,000," which seems peculiar, but it's probably a pretty good filtering mechanism. Because anybody who walks for $2,000 right there is probably going to cost you more than $2,000.
No kidding. Wow. I've never heard of that strategy
before. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I don't even know what that is.
That's
like a negative carrot or something.
Yeah.
And then they station people at their desks for their call center jobs. And
Wait, Dan. Wait, I got to know how many people take that.
I don't know, actually. That's a good question.
That's fascinating.
I don't think a lot of people take it. You know, it's probably...
you think they say, this is a trick question, isn't it? That's what I would say.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. My guess is that
it's probably
less than 10%.
In a perverse way, it's smart, though, isn't it?
In a non-perverse way, it's smart. it's a good filtering mechanism. I mean,
yeah.
I think it's smart management. And then once these call center people are in place, they go to their desk, and the rule is that when a call comes in, you solve the customer's problem. You do it your way, however you want. No scripts, no timing, no monitoring of the calls. If it takes you 1 minute, that's fine. If it takes you 1 hour, that's fine too.
Now, see, here's the thing, Dan. I know that that kind of instruction is compatible with the younger generations.
Mm.
But I think it would have been compatible with my generation.
Well, I think that's probably right. I think that in some ways people want to have a certain amount of autonomy and freedom to do their jobs the way that they want to do it.
Right.
What we haven't done is we haven't challenged that orthodoxy. And that's what I'm trying to do in this book, using the science, is that,
right,
you know, that this idea that, you know, there's this notion out there, kind of peculiar among managers, that many managers believe that if people weren't offered carrots or sticks, if they weren't threatened with a stick or enticed with a carrot, people would just sit there and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's the case. And no one, you know, the other thing is no one ever believes that about themselves.
Right. Now, you talk about the rise and the fall of Motivation 2.0. Tell us what that is.
Well, let's go back one step. Motivation 1.0. Human beings are a mix of drives. We have a biological drive. We can call that our first drive. We eat when we're hungry. We drink when we're thirsty. We have sex to satisfy our carnal urges.
Right. That's the reptilian brain.
Yeah, that's part of what it is to be human, but that's not all it is to be human. And you know, for a long time, we had a kind of societal operating system based on that. I mean, 50,000 years ago. All right, so that, you know, a societal operating system built on the biological drive doesn't work very well if you want to trade with other people or do stuff with folks outside of your clan. So we upgraded to what I call Motivation 2.0, which was an operating system built on the reward and punishment drive, which is a very powerful driving piece.
And that's based on ethics and societal norms and laws and regulations.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so that Motivation 2.0 worked really well. I mean, it's actually, in many ways, a spectacular human achievement.
Mm-hmm.
It helped
build societies and governments.
You got it. It was a great invention. The problem is that if we can think of it in some ways as a technology, and it's a technology that has outlived its usefulness. And so for a lot of the work that people are doing today, again, that work that is a little bit more creative, a little bit more mm-hmm. conceptual, a little less rule-based, those kinds of that motivational operating system is in some ways incompatible. And so we need to upgrade to a different motivational system.
And when we come back, I want to ask Dan about what he's talking about, where we're going. I guess it's 2.1, maybe 3.0. What kind of ethics do we have to make sure are included in that? Does that need to be part of that new equation? The book is called Drive. The author is Daniel H. Pink. He's our friend. It's available wherever books are sold. Tintail, stay with us. Little Chicago bringing us back.
I guess I thought you'd be here forever.
Welcome back, 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks for staying with us. Dan Pink is our guest. Daniel H. Pink is the name on the cover of the book Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. Dan, I know it's available wherever books are sold. How about a website?
Well, my website, Jim, is danpink.com, danpink.com.
So check it out. And, of course, all the other books that Dan's written all are outstanding. Dan, you just explained to us about the multi-millennial tenure of Motivation 2.0.
Right.
What's next? Are we transitioning
now?
And if we are, what's it called?
Well, I mean, again, just a simple way to think about it is to think about it as Motivation 3.0, which is built not on our reward and punishment drive, which, you know, obviously still exists and is still important, but more on our third drive, which is our desire to do things because they matter, because they're interesting, because we get better at them, because they contribute to the world. And there are three components, the science shows, of that third drive, which are autonomy, which is our desire to be self-directed, mastery, which is our desire to get better at something that matters, and purpose, which is our desire to be part of something larger than ourselves. And for enduring motivation, particularly for more creative, conceptual kinds of work, those three elements, autonomy, mastery, and purpose, work a heck of a lot better than carrots and sticks.
Except in, and here's a question I'm going to ask you, though, and I alluded to this as we went to the break. In the macro perspective of 2.0, the carrot was success, and the stick was what I got if I didn't play by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
When in 3.0, there are fewer rules, it sounds like to me. It's a little more amorphous.
It's a little bit more amorphous, but there's still outcomes. I mean, but, the reason that you want autonomy and master and purpose, I mean, they're good. I think they're humane, but they also work a heck of a lot better.
Yeah.
And so that kind of motivational operating system will actually deliver better results than the carrot and the stick operating system.
But do we need to include ethical standards, more aggressive, more active ethical standards in 3.0 just to maybe take up any potential holes that there might be that when you move on from the carrot and the stick? Is that a fair question?
That's an interesting question. That's a very interesting question. I'm not entirely sure. Although one of the problems with the carrot and stick motivators is, you know, and the science is pretty clear on this as well, is, and also our experience as business people who follow the news, read the newspaper, is pretty clear on this as well, too. If you give people high-stakes payoffs for very short-term rewards,
yeah.
High-stakes payoffs for very short-term results,
right. Mm-hmm.
Some people are going to cheat. And so I think there's actually potentially less cheating and less unethical behavior under 3.0, just because, as you say, it's a little bit more amorphous.
So you actually believe that the 3.0 will cause people to behave themselves more because it's the right thing to do?
Not necessarily. I just think that it's a different structure. So that if you're if you have a single, let's say that you need to sell 100 units of something in a quarter. Well, there are plenty of people who will take the low road to selling 100 units.
Right.
They can fake orders. They can sell it to people who don't need the product, et cetera, et cetera,
right.
et cetera. When in the absence of that kind of short-term goal, it's hard to cheat. If you're being rated on a wider set of metrics, which is not only your sales but customer satisfaction, teamwork,
mm-hmm.
and so forth,
balanced,
it's harder to game the
balanced
system.
Balanced activity, we used to call it.
Yeah, it's harder to game the system. This is why
mm-hmm.
you have some very interesting examples of companies that are eliminating commissions for their sales force.
Right. Well, one of the things that I think managers are dealing with, I think that whether they realize it or not, managers are moving towards 3.0, maybe unconsciously, and that's the reason why I'm excited about your book, Dan. You're giving them a home, aren't you? You're giving them a vessel, a way of grounding into these changes that they're experiencing. You're revealing it to them, and I'm glad you're doing that. But I think they're having a hard time with this because they still are responsible for the ultimate success. And it sounds like they're giving up a little bit of control without any kind of guarantees that it's going to be better. And that's what's worrying, I think, a lot of managers. Is that a fair observation?
I think that's right. I think it's inevitable that you have to guarantee, you have to give up some control. I think that the idea that any success is guaranteed, whether you're using carrots and sticks or autonomy, mastery, and purpose, is foolish.
Yeah.
There are
yeah.
no guarantees out there.
Yeah. As long as I have the stick, I can always, use that. That's not a guarantee, but it is a pretty sure outcome. Dan, we got a lot more to talk about. Will you come back?
Sure thing.
I've enjoyed having you back. It's good to see you after all these years. The book is called Drive, ladies and gentlemen. Now you remember why we like Dan Pink. Dan, congratulations on the book. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Jim.
Daniel H. Pink, ladies and gentlemen, outstanding book. This is another groundbreaker from our friend Dan Pink. Gonna take a break. Actually, I gotta go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame. I've run out of time. Time flies when you're having fun. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.